Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hal. Today, we've got a special episode because we're here in Hanoi at Hack Spaces, which is one of my favorite coffee shops, event spaces. It's got a bar. It's right here in the heart of Hanoi. Go check it out on your next visit, or if you're here, it's one of my favorites. You'll see me here every now and then. Today, we've also got a special guest. His name is Miro. You might remember him or notice who he is because he's my host on the Vietnamese version of Vietnam Innovators. Welcome, Miro. We talk all the time, but today on the podcast, something a little bit different. You're here in Hanoi. Our guests and our audience know that you're mostly from Singapore, right? But you've decided to relocate. Maybe you can share what's the latest update on your end, why you're back in Vietnam.
First of all, thank you very much. I think that is a very good catch up right after the 1 year being somehow we engaged together.
April 5th, 2022. That was the first episode.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of things changed during over the times, right? One of the things that maybe go back a bit, spending a lot of years in Europe, after that, you know, traveled across Europe, UK, Germany. After that, you know, somehow tried Singapore. I think it's still the best place. Amongst all these countries that I visited, I think Vietnam is still the best country to live in. I think that, of course, you need to separate a few things that you have pollution, traffic, and all these things. But on the other side, you know, you are able to engage, you are able to experience, and you are able to live your life. That is the way I would like to maybe share.
Okay.
Comparing with Singapore, Singapore is a country, you know, everybody knows this is one of the most expensive countries in the world. It's very ordered country. Is everything is set, right? So I think that you have the borders there. Even the whole location area is, you know, bordered, right? So somehow after some years, you feel that there's a bit of the those borders. You feel those borders.
So you feel kind of a bit locked in a way, in a good and bad way.
I think it's
a safe place.
It's safe. Is predictable. Is somehow you are able to forecast the situation that could might happen. But I think that I'm feeling that it's not providing this environment to do these innovations. Innovations you are able to do where the market is not developed yet.
Yes.
Right? So you have a lot of different opportunities.
Cool.
In Vietnam, I think that is in every corner when you see, you have the opportunity to innovate. There, everything is innovated already. Right? So I think that market is already somehow saturated.
And the year that you spent at Google in Singapore, I'm sure you had a lot of colleagues, a lot of clients, just friends you would meet. They might be asking, like, what Vietnam is like.
Yeah.
They're wondering, you know, it's easy for us to forget that for the people listening to today's podcast, most of you are in Vietnam already. You know how exciting it can be from a business lifestyle perspective. What are the common questions that people come to you for?
They're like, okay.
You know, of course, there's the banh mi, the pho, where to go in Vietnam. I'm sure you have itineraries that you give people already. From a business perspective, what are they asking? What gets them excited about Vietnam?
I have a very good friend of mine from the time when I was working in Google at one of my partner in Thailand. And he was asking me, you know, how it is, because he's also the foreigner living in, as an expat living in Thailand, working in the company there. But after that, he asked me, you know, if I move to Vietnam, for example, how it is, you know, whether I'm able to live with my family there, whether we're able to survive on the market. How about using the taxi? How about using that and that, right? What about the package, right? So that is, you know, quite the common question for the expats. What I'm telling them is, number one, if you are living in Saigon, for example, that you might share a bit more, you are basically you are able to survive without Vietnamese, right? So everybody somehow speaks English, somehow you are able to communicate. Majority of the things that you can use, the apps and all these things, so I think that you don't need to talk too much. The second thing is that even the salaries or the whole market is also ready.
It's mature now.
Yeah.
Even from the junior all the way to the more senior levels?
I believe so. Yeah. Seeing the people that are right after the graduation, they are coming back to Vietnam. It's not the trend anymore to stay in the country.
Yep.
And after that to come back, right?
So the Vietnamese who study abroad, they go to maybe Singapore for study and then they stay there. That's not happening anymore.
I believe that that number, that community is decreasing. And they're more right after the graduation, they just start to look for the job opportunities back to Vietnam. So that is interesting. I don't know how you see, for example,
foreigners. Yeah, I see that too. A lot of the, so I'm 30 now, and a lot of the friends that I had that were Vietnamese who studied with me in the US 10 years ago, they're all still in the US, a lot of them. I don't think any of them come back to Vietnam. But the same group that is finishing study now, they all come back to Vietnam. And I think it's because the lifestyle, the income levels, the opportunities are higher here, but also it's kind of worse in the US now or other places. I don't want to say like it's bad, it's just not as appealing now, whereas here there's a lot better opportunity. So let's see if that trend continues. I think for Vietnam it will be. And for people from overseas, I think that's a good thing too. Not the Vietnamese necessarily, but the, let's say, FDI companies that are thinking about launching businesses here. They're worried about recruiting people that speak English or can understand their working culture. Correct. I think Vietnamese are much equipped now, even if they didn't study abroad. Just the access of information, English understanding, curiosity about Thailand, let's say. So many Thai companies moving to Vietnam at the moment, or looking as another market to expand. So I think it's quite promising. I think the trend will continue. And even Vietnamese Americans, let's say. And you're Vietnamese Slovak at the end of the day, right, Miro? You're not you're not Vietnamese, but you're Vietnamese Slovak. I think the Vietnamese who were born and lived overseas, they're considering Vietnam now too.
Correct. So I think that that is one perspective that we are talking about, you know, the opportunities, the market and all these things, right? Of course, the second that you mentioned by me and Pho and all these things, what I realized that before I came to Singapore, everybody's telling me that on the time that you are able to experience all kind of food from the Southeast Asia. But after a year, I can share my own experience is that still the Vietnamese food is the one of the best. So you are missing this real, you know, real taste of Pho, real taste of banh mi, right? And there is a kind of a nice mixture of Southeast Asia. So they will do the banh mi, they will call it banh mi, but the taste is different. It's a bit of the Malaysia, a bit of Indonesia there. So you have that feeling, right? So they need to serve that you know, customers. So here, I think that the second piece is that majority of the people, and I believe still that the food and the cuisine will connect people, right? So that is the first things that you engage with somebody, you go for the dinner, you go for the lunch. And here, I think that is that basic that you can connect with the people, right?
Last night offline, we talked about how different Vietnam is compared to other Asian countries about working. So we talk about how easy it is to get around. Everyone speaks English in Saigon. Hanoi is pretty good too. But what about how Vietnamese see international folks when they join a Vietnamese company, let's say? Are they pretty open? Like, for example, if you went to China, Japan, or Korea, if you don't speak the local language, it's going to be very difficult for you professionally to grow your career.
Correct.
How is that perception, you think, in Vietnam?
Based on my kind of observation, right? So I've traveled across the different countries, but what I'm seeing is that in Japan, in Korea, in China, in all other countries, in Thailand, now you are feeling that if you are not local and you are not speaking the real local accent, so they will immediately realize that you are not from here. And you are not able to get into some restaurants, some you know, bars and some places that is for local only. So that is, I think, is one thing that in Vietnam is in opposite. You are able to get to the, you know, wedding party. If you are just, you know, foreigner, taking the motorbikes around, they will invite you for the wedding party. It will not happen in Indonesia, in Thailand, all these places, right? So I have many friends, expats here. They just love to ride the motorbikes in the hills. And he was invited to the wedding party, local wedding party. You know, he was drinking with them, you know, dancing with them. It's not happening in other countries, right? So I believe that if we take the whole Southeast Asia or APEC, Vietnamese, I believe, is one of the most friendliest, you know, cultures.
Okay.
And even they cannot speak English, for example, but you will understand from the body language that you are welcome. I don't know how you see this. You are kind of the mix, you know, Vietnamese origin, Vietnamese, but American. If you come here, do you feel that you are a stranger somewhere?
I used to in the first year, but that was my own choice. Like, I chose to be feeling like a stranger. It was something I couldn't control, but now that it's been 7 years, I feel much more comfortable here. So I think it just takes a bit of time. It doesn't have to take that long, but it could be 6 months, 1 year. Once you are part of certain communities, you'll feel a lot more comfortable, I would say.
Okay.
So here it's been pretty easy. Mira, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit. Thank you for sharing, you know, your experience at Google, living overseas. You're back home in Vietnam now. I want to reflect a little bit on the 1 year that you've been a podcaster with Vietcetera. So for everyone listening today, you can actually listen or view the first episode that Mira and I did together almost exactly 1 year ago. You've done 30 plus episodes with us. Has it been easy being a podcaster? How's that experience been?
I think that we discussed that a bit, right? Mm. At the very beginning, I still remember we sit in the hotel in Saigon and you asked me, hey, you know, do you want to do the podcast? Mm. No experience, no kind of even the target to be the podcaster on that time, but I accepted your kind of the offer on that time, right? After around 30 episodes that I made. One of the key things, what is my kind of lesson learned from that, is kind of the small MBA. Everybody who is asking me, what is the values that you are getting from that, right? Mm. Number one is that you are getting the knowledge that all these people they are sharing with you, these guest speakers, all these, you know, invited guests, they're really, you know, their capabilities and the experience they can share with you on air or off the record as well. So I think that is one of the knowledge base is increasing. So I'm feeling that during the whole year, I have an understanding of all the businesses that my guests they're in. The second is that it's ability for you to meet these really interesting people. Mm. Without that podcast, potentially will be quite difficult to get somebody on a coffee to talk 1 hour.
You don't have a reason to ask them for a coffee sometimes.
You might be able to find something. Mm. You need to be very innovative. Mm. But with the podcast, it's easier, right? Yeah. easier. So I think that we're talking about whether we're able to grow somebody from zero to be the podcaster, right? Mm. I believe that, of course, you need to have a bit of the training, you know, need to listen a bit, need to, you know, absorb different podcasters around. But the second is that it's somehow you need to be natural from your personality. And I don't know, maybe I will ask you on that topic, but, you know, whether it's for the extroverts or introvert, right? I was thinking about if the introvert, the real strong introvert can do the podcast. I've met a lot of people already, even during the Google, there are people that they are very, you know, silent. They are not so talkative, but they're doing a podcast, their own podcast, right? Mm. They're sharing, you know, the feelings, you know, when you are getting to the adult year age and all these things. Mm. So they are doing this, right? So my experience was really great journey, whole year. Great learning, because if you don't have time to just read, to just listen, you are able to get this experience on the podcast. Mm. And this is doing the regularly. So that's why I think that is, you know, regular education.
The regular consistency is very important too.
Correct, yeah.
So Mira, you've done 30 episodes, but you missed a lot too.
Yeah.
So for those of you, if you remember, Miro for the last year has been in Singapore. He's been working full time at Google. And luckily his family, of course, lives in Vietnam. He has a lot of reasons to come here for work and for personal reasons. And so it's been easy. You can have that consistency. But you've also missed a few weeks without doing shows and all that. How important is the consistency? Like for you, if you were to reflect on the performance of the show the past year, like I look at the numbers and when I see your show, like 10, 12, 15 weeks go by and it's every week, it's good. But then you miss a month, right?
Okay.
And then that's when it goes down. Mm-hmm. How important is the consistency for you now? Now that you look at the new season of Vietnam Innovators, what do you want to do to make sure the show has that consistency? And what will you do, you think, to improve that?
I think that you mentioned that is the number one criteria to be successful, I believe, for the podcast and this for the content. I think that you need to fulfill this demand, right? Mm. So the people, even myself, I'm listening to the podcast, I'm listening to some kind of the, trying to absorb some information. So I'm expecting to have these regular updates and regular new things, right? If you don't have that, of course you will jump into another channel and you get that from different channel.
Yeah. You get it from Viet Success.
For example, right? But I think that the consistency is number one. Mm. If I may, I will share your story as well, because from time I know you, you have this consistency within the whole kind of during the whole day. So when you start your day, when you finish your day, what you're doing during the day, you have this full consistency over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years that I know you, right? Mm. So that is already, you know, that is showing also that the consistency is very important. Mm. What I would like to do with the podcast right now, being already in Vietnam right now. So number one is that we have the ability now to find even more deeper in the market, right? So I think that me and you, somehow we explored the majority of these, you know, CEOs, founders, and the interesting people already. But how we're able to get deeper into the market, because some people, they are still, you know, not hiding, but they are just building something, not publicly, you know, shared.
And sometimes they don't need to be on the podcast. Like, we can engage people around them, but some people just don't want to be on the show, right? So I think the next phase for us too is thinking how to engage these people offline, these communities offline, how to build those communities. We talk about it a lot through our other podcasts like Gutma, Have a Sip, First Lady, all these other shows. How do we build these communities and activate them the podcast is always on. So there's every week, sometimes it doesn't even matter who the guest is anymore. People just want to hear about what business trends are happening, you know, what are people talking about, what do people want to know. And we'll talk about that a little bit later today too. I know a lot of you guys might be wondering about the economy, how we see it. We'll chat about that in a little bit too. Okay, that's great, Miro. I think, what kind of themes can we expect from your podcast this year?
I will be very much focusing on the people that they built something. So kind of the builders, right? So I think that you will be able to experience this very soon. I think that the majority of the people, if you are, it's very big difference between the hired executive and the kind of the founder, right? So if you have this, the full ownership of the company and the business, it's a different mindset rather than the hired CEO or hired, you know, executive in a company. So I would like to maybe try to understand that, because that is the real hustle that they need to go through, right? You see the people that they need to work 24 hours a day, for example. Sometimes they work like that. If you are hired, you get your salary and you get paid. Of course, you will be, you know, trying to just fix 9 to 5 potentially, right? You just meet your KPI and all these things. But those founders and builders, they go beyond that. And that is interesting stories to hear, right? So. You are not satisfied with what you have, even that you receive 100% already, but you are going beyond.
So I want to talk about, this goes for the builders, but also the executives that are at companies. What are the problems that they have? Like, is there any shared common challenge that they have?
Yeah.
Maybe it's about hiring, maybe it's about meeting people, sharing in private groups about their struggles, either, you know, within the team, mentally, physically. What are some common challenges and requests that they always have?
Okay. That will be interesting also hearing from you, because you have the different kind of the community a bit, right? So you have, you know, this executive from the FDIs. So I think that it will be interesting. What I learned is that number one is that they will be sharing mainly about the human resource. So who they partner with, who is the in the team, who is the core team, and how they're able to hire the right team. And across all the episodes that I did already is that I'm hearing majority of the, not the issues, it's more kind of the top of mind. It's how you're able to hire the people, train them, and how you're able to retain them. So that is, I think, the one.
Well, what's the hardest one? Hiring?
I think that potentially, if I take that, potentially hiring will be difficult.
At the very top.
At the very top, yeah. But after that, you are able to just keep the motivation, just keep this, you know, the energy that they will stay with you, right? So this, especially for the startups or even the new companies with the new businesses, business lines. So that is, you know, the area where there's a trouble, right? How they are going to solve this. They're expecting potentially ability to come together with the groups of the like-minded people with the similar problems and how to solve this, right? Especially here in Vietnam, if you don't have this any platform, you will try to connect with some advisors, friends of friends, and all these things. But I believe that they are also expecting or the, maybe requesting to have something like this that they can come and they can share openly about the problems, right?
Okay.
So that will be interesting to potentially see if we are potentially able to not only to just bring the stories to share, but also how we're able to bring everybody together to solve the problems. What about you? Maybe just when we're on this topic, what about you?
So my experience at Vietcetera has been similar, but I would move around the difficulty to easiest.
Okay.
For us, the easiest is hiring.
Easiest?
Yeah, because we have the communication. We're the media company. So we're always on. So let's say like our intern today, she's sitting out there, Han, she's been listening to our podcast for years. So the moment that an internship became available, she had an idea about the culture of the company already. So for her to apply or be interested to apply was very easy. So I tell a lot of the people on the podcast that join us who have maybe B2B companies or they work at unsexy companies, like they're very under the radar, but they need good people. How do they communicate? And I tell people it's through the content. You don't need to, in a way, like every company is a media company, because if you don't communicate, somebody else will control your communication. They will control your narrative. If you don't say anything, someone else will say it for you, and it could be good or it could be bad. That will always happen. You can't really control that as much. But what you can control is the kind of content you put out. So in the case of, let's say, one of our guests on Vietnam Innovators 2 years ago, Bruce from McKinsey, he's the managing partner. he's a pretty quiet guy. I mean, when you meet him, he'll say a lot of things, but he's not in the media a lot. And if he is, it's very controlled. And sometimes in a boring way. You kind of have to be boring, right? Yeah. You have to be kind of like, just here it is, you know, here's some sharing. Okay, great. When he came on the show, it was his first ever podcast. He said that every single person that applied to McKinsey and he would interview later for the past 2 years has listened to that podcast before they met him. Mm-hmm. So they were like having a coffee chat with him before they even met him.
Okay.
So this is a form of always on communication that you can control without doing anything. Like when you're hiring, the number of times you have to sit down with somebody, have a coffee, you're trying really hard to convince them. It shouldn't be about convincing. I think it's about inspiring. And one way to inspire people is to control your story, control your communication, and let it speak for itself. People think like, oh, I don't want to be in the news. I don't want to be in the media. It's not about that. It's about controlling your own narrative. Otherwise, other people will. Because you look at the news today, let's say you're a big company in real estate. A lot of real estate companies are not doing very well today because of the bond crisis and the financial crisis. A lot of people are holding their money at the moment. They're not spending, not making big purchases. If you're a real estate company that's doing well, let's say, right? You suffer as a result of just being as part of the industry right now. Maybe you can't hire anybody. Buyers aren't interested in your project for the wrong reasons because they're thinking in that big kind of industry way. But as a real estate company that is healthy, and we have a few of our clients and partners that we work with that are actually doing very well at the moment, it's up to them to control. Otherwise, they will let the mainstream content control it for them. So that's why hiring for us has been easy, because we can control our communication. I think our problem now is retention. That's definitely the hardest, because as a young company, we don't have the infrastructure to support the training, young people, or at least the mentorship. Training, like you said, it's easy. You can hire external facilitators. You can build your capability in-house. And the training could be just a week, could be onboarding, having a proper system, people come in, they learn the tools, they learn who to go to when they need help. So that's in the middle for us, but the retention is for sure the hardest. So it's kind of flipped for us. Retention, the hardest, hiring, and then training, and then hiring is the easiest.
Okay, so, I see.
But I think that's because of the always-on communication. If you have that and you do it well, you'll be able to have a very high funnel of interests.
I think that coming to that point, there are a few companies or there are a few founders that sometimes during the hiring, the candidate, they will not meet the CEO immediately, right? And I think that they are going to through the process, like, you know, talent acquisition, potentially HR lead, and after that you are coming to the you know, hiring manager and all these things, right? But usually you are not able to meet the CEOs, right? So I think that your point that you're mentioning that before the interview or before joining the company, you are watching the podcast, and you at least you have the feeling about the major, the key player, what they are thinking, what is the way of their communication.
Yep.
Very valuable. I think that that is also, we haven't talked about it with my guests about that, but that is also an interesting point that now.
Yeah, the CEO is always the least accessible.
That's right.
They cannot interview everyone, or if they did, they have like 10 minutes. So having that podcast, like for example, it could be any sort of content, but for us at least, allows us to connect with the people before we even meet them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a good way to scale your communication. Like you look at companies like Amazon, Jeff Bezos is in the news all the time for good or for bad reasons, but he has his own social media. He's updating. Like the other day I saw that he was eating McDonald's. Like he was saying like, oh, I love McDonald's. It's just kind of like, you wouldn't think that someone like him would say something like that, right?
Yeah, correct.
But,
yeah.
You know, he's just enjoying his Big Mac. It was hilarious. He's like in his sunglasses. And somehow I feel like that's more relatable to me than a fancy picture of him at a conference. Like, I just want to know who this guy is. What is the culture of the company? There were some memes on Twitter that were saying after, like, oh, during a recession, even Jeff Bezos is saving money by eating McDonald's. You know, he's not going to the Michelin star restaurant anymore. In a way, I as a consumer of Amazon products, I kind of like that. I kind of see that, like, I respect him just a little bit more because something like that makes me see him in a fresh, new way. And I think a lot of CEOs in Vietnam, they're not thinking about that. And for good reason too. I think the old age of content and communication is like, oh, I want to be on the cover of a magazine. I need to look powerful. I need to have a suit. And like, I think those are important too. But relating to the everyday people and what their challenges, what they want to hear from their leaders, that's becoming more and more important. Because at the end of the day, these leaders, they're normal people too.
That's right.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
At home, they're probably just like sitting on the couch, you know, having a beer, watching YouTube as well. You know, they're not like fancy all the time. And sometimes it's important to communicate that in a way that people can feel comfortable with. And that's why like this podcast, we've continued for almost 3 years, because it started just being like a coffee chat. And that's how we kind of met too, right? We want to just connect over a coffee. And I think, you know, we can kind of do that at the same time that we're having a podcast. Today, like Miro is having, right after this, a podcast with a very dear friend of mine. She's very busy all the time. Her name's Sylvia. She'll be on the podcast very soon. And yeah, she's a very busy person. I catch up with her every few months. Would the two of you ever have a chance to communicate? Do her staff have a chance to communicate with her all the time?
No, not really, it's tough.
Yeah. She's traveling all the time, and but now we have a reason to kind of share her story, what she's thinking. She's in real estate too.
Yeah.
So let's hear from her, like what's going on. And I think her company is doing pretty well, I think during this time, better than most. So let's hear it from her as well. Cool, Mira. I think let's talk about, thank you for sharing and asking those great questions. I think I want to move on to how Vietnam is doing. I have a certain perspective. I talk to a lot of CEOs, you do too. But the past year, you were coming from the outside. And a lot of people that are coming from the outside have been asking me, oh, how you guys have you know, some changes for the economy, the government, society, borders are now open, all these different topics. And they're always asking me how that's affecting Vietnam's future. So why don't we just start with that? If you were to share in 60 seconds an elevator pitch, if I'm in the elevator with you at the airport, let's say, right? And I know you're flying to Vietnam, and I want to hear what your take is. Are you optimistic? Are you a bit pessimistic? Are you in the middle? What are some things to look out for?
I was having a talk with many friends across the Southeast Asia. If you take right now, let's take the broader picture. You have the Southeast Asia of the 650 million people. A majority of the half of them, they are based in Indonesia, right? So around 300 million Indonesian. The rest, you have the other Southeast Asia countries. So from perspective of the, for example, like if you compare with the US or Europe, so this kind of the consistent group of the countries, right? But here in Asia, it's very different. So I think that you have different culture, different background, history, language, and all these things, right? And if you take Vietnam from that, number one is that, what is important right now? Number one is the digital adaptability. I believe that one of the key and the fastest growing is Vietnam. The second is if you look at the GDP growth, I think that you see that, I think it's those numbers you cannot just, you know, just overlook. Number three is that the whole international engagement of the country towards the different organizations and the countries, I think that is one of the fastest and one of the most active country in the region.
Like inviting, like just over the weekend, Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State of the US, visited. And you know, they're building a huge new embassy near the FPT headquarters. Super exciting.
Correct. Right? Yeah, yeah.
All these other high level like economic organizations, governments visiting Vietnam right now, they're taking it very seriously. So it's good.
So I think that there's a sign that it is one of the most important country in the region. Number two, I think that that is, you know, kind of on a more political side, right? So, but on the business side, you are seeing that as well. All the FDI's leaders or the, you know, MNC companies that are coming, the leaders will be in Vietnam once per year. And that is also the sign. Sometimes, you know, in Laos, Cambodia, Myanmar, for example, they need to somehow manage for the top leaders to come over the sites, for example.
But here they'll come.
They will come here to Vietnam. I think that majority of the big companies, they are having Vietnam on the radar already for the next move. And I'm seeing this from the time I was in Germany. Some companies that, you know, the top companies in Germany, they put Vietnam as option, right? Maybe Vietnam, maybe Thailand, this kind of option, or the Vietnam or China. But right now, I think that you look across the whole portfolio of these big companies, they have Vietnam as on the map.
So let's say I'm a CEO of a Vietnamese company, a big one, a small one, but I see international investment or clients as very important. What's your advice for them right now? How to be part of that conversation?
I have a lot of talks about this because somehow we need to improve one of the things is if the Vietnamese companies, they would like to go abroad, and this is the only way how to grow, right? So of course you have the big market is 100 million population and all these things, but that is, you are limited with that population. So how we are able to target at least Southeast Asia, which is 650 million. And after that you go to US and you go to Europe, right? So that is a different market. Mm-hmm. Being able to do that, I think that number one is that you need to be comfortable to go out. And you need to be more dynamic, you know, more active to
How do you do that though for most Vietnamese companies?
If I share FPT story, for example, FPT is one of the most active player, Vietnamese company that going abroad and opening the offices, you know, creating the teams across the world. I think that that is how we do this. One is the World Economic Forum, for example, is a very good forum to engage with the top leaders, you know, kind of the pioneers in the many areas. So there you go to Switzerland, small village, and you have all the leaders, top leaders across the world there in that place, right? So that is the way how you can come there. You will need to feel comfortable to meet them. You need to be comfortable to just request for the meeting. And this is now the first step, right? The second is how you are going to sell and what you are selling. Number one, you sell the country. So meaning that you need to, you know, bring the real top of mind things from your country. Why they should come there, not because of you, but because of country first, right? The second will be, what are you able to provide them, right? So how you are open to join hands with them, what is your unique selling point, and how you see the fit from them.
Okay.
So my view is that more and more, I think that Sylvia in our podcast after, she will be sharing that because she is quite international. So what we are seeing now, for example, the second generation, they are already doing this because somehow they were seeded abroad, right? You know, taking university abroad, you know, spend some time abroad, and now they're coming back.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So for our listeners today, when Miro mentions second generation, he's referring to family businesses that represent a very large part of the economy in Vietnam. Their sons and daughters who are of professional working age, maybe not just working, but might be taking over the businesses, they've seen the world. Or they're very curious about the world. So let's talk about that. How important is this next gen leadership to the future of Vietnam? What should they be looking out for? If they're a second gen, what do they need to know to make sure that their family business will be just as important as the businesses are today?
I had a chance to talk with a few of this kind of second generation being in the executive position already. I think that, of course, we cannot compare with their parents, the time of their parents. I think that, of course, it was not so easy to travel. It was not easy to engage with foreign companies and travel across the world and doing the business, right? So on that time, it was more about building, leveraging what you have here domestically and create something for your country first. It was kind of the mindset of that time. There were some of them, of course, they studied in the Soviet Union, for example, or some in Europe, in US, and you know, different countries. But right now, the population or the community that they studied abroad, I think this majority, 90%, more than 90%, they studied abroad. UK, US, Australia, Japan, and all these countries. How it is important is, one, they experience how it is to live outside of Vietnam. Second, they experience the culture. It's very important, I think, that you understand the different cultures, right? They understand that culture, they understand they receive or they obtain the skills that you are not able to get from Vietnam only, right? So these are kind of social skills that you need to have. The third one is also your perspective. If you are only in Vietnam, your perspective will be somehow limited. Whether you want it or not, it will be limited. If you are going outside, you are potentially going to Africa and going to, you know, different, you know, Myanmar or other countries, you have the different perspective and you have a lot of different ideas.
Do you think the future of these Vietnamese companies, they could be as big as FPT all the way to a small, medium business, do they need to be abroad? Do they need to think internationally to survive in the next generation?
I think that number one, whether they have the potential to be bigger than the parents, so let's call it their parents' legacy, they have the potential to be bigger. Because majority of these companies that we are talking about, they are dominant on the market already, right? Some of them, they are dominant on the market. So if they're dominant, so what it will be the next year, 10 years, the population will be still around that number, it's not doubling, right? So you don't have expectation to grow this domestic market. So the only way is to go outside, right? Do they have the potential? Yes, they do. Do they need to go? I believe that yes, they should. Why? I think that if you look at the whole, the global brand map, if we talk about Samsung, you immediately connect with Korea. You talk about Apple is US, right? And all the countries, they have something. Do is Vietnam having something like that, that you just mentioned one, and they will know that it's Vietnam?
Yeah.
We don't have that brand, right?
We don't have that brand, okay.
We have pho. Potentially pho is close to that, but it's not the business, right?
So when you were working at FPT, you were the VP of Global Affairs. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of your roles. When you mentioned to a client or a potential client that, hey, FPT's from Vietnam, what is their first reaction?
I need to spend at least 30 minutes to explain.
30 minutes?
That is, you know, how much time you lose on the meeting with execs.
So you have to convince them already about Vietnam before going into any other discussion?
You know, my sharing and kind of my pitch deck, how it looks like on that time. Number one, you need to spend around 10 minutes about Vietnam. Mm-hmm. You know, Vietnam economy, the big cities, growth, infrastructure, and all these things. After, you need to spend around 20 minutes about your company. Mm-hmm. And have you ever heard Apple doing this introduction about themselves on the business meetings? No, right? Mm-hmm. Samsung, they are not doing this as well. Mm-hmm. So number one, from the productivity perspective, right? Mm-hmm. You are cutting around 30 minutes already from the 1 hour meeting.
Wow.
And you can focus on the business only.
Yep.
For FPT on the time, this now is a little bit better, but you still spend a half of the time to just introduce about your company.
For a company like FPT, what solutions do they have to kind of skip that? What did they try? Did they try things? Some worked, some didn't work. What can you share?
I think that is not the issue that one single person can solve. Mm. It is, you know, the whole industry needs to...
The whole country.
Even the whole country. Mm. Because, for example, if we take India from IT outsourcing perspective, mm-hmm. India is one of the largest contributions to the country's GDP is the outsourcing. Mm. So that is the whole industry. And that whole industry has the framework, has the government support, has different, you know, incentives to grow this industry. Mm. In Vietnam, we are doing that already, but I think that we need to have more these kind of the things, too, especially for the outsourcing part, right? Mm. The second is that, of course, all these companies need to grow together. It's not only that FPT is the leading the market, but we need to have a lot of FPTs, smaller FPTs, but we need to have this the whole industry.
It's all of a shared, it's like a shared interest. It's like a group marketing effort. We all have to contribute to this Vietnam brand.
Correct.
Okay.
So I think that even for you from the media's perspective, right? Mm. Of course, one of the things is how you communicate this. If you do is, you know, consistently 5 years, 10 years communication outside, mm-hmm. potentially you can avoid this, right? Mm-hmm. But it takes still 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. right? But now how you are able to bring from the local brands outside of Vietnam without any too much, you know, communication. Mm-hmm. And that is the beauty of that, right? So mm-hmm. you are maybe in the consumer that the mass will know about you. Mm-hmm. For example, Zalo, for example, is one of the brand that somehow, like in Google, if you search for something, you Google it. Mm-hmm. And now if we meet, I think that it just exchange Zalo. It's kind of the first, you know, idea, right? So that is the thing that we need to look at, this kind of the brands, the companies. Mm-hmm. That we replace their name mm-hmm. with some verb.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that is interesting. Maybe we should explore this within
like
the business.
All of this, all of that. Or,
yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Both inside Vietnam, but also outside. Mm-hmm. Miro, I think we're getting close to the end of the podcast today. I always like to kind of summarize with a final question. So Miro, in your case, you've heard a lot about different industries. You yourself are an expert from your time at FPT at Google, especially in digital transformation, these things. What's one thing that you really want to learn more about, though? Like, if you were listening to my podcast or any other podcast in or outside of Vietcetera, what is one thing, one topic that you want to know more about so you can understand better? It could be about real estate. It could be about financial services. It could be about airlines. Like, what do you want to know more about?
I believe it will be the people.
People, okay.
It is not a specific industry, but something is having across the whole industries. Mm. I think that my takeaway from all these podcasts that I have, all my meetings, that discussion that I have, is the people. Because behind everything is people, right? Behind Vietcetera is you and the whole team. Behind the companies like Samsung is also the founder and the whole team. So how you are able to understand people, how you are able to maximize the potential of the people. Mm. And that is interesting. Mm. Especially during, you know, this layoff in the tech industry, you start to think about, you know, what is these people, how they are contributing to the companies. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, they were behind of the huge projects and huge products that there is, you know, the billions of the people they're using right now. Mm-hmm. But they've been laid off, for example. Mm. And if that is the case, right? So how you think about this, how you're able to leverage the brains and the capabilities that these people have. Mm-hmm. And that is interesting. I would like to learn more about how you are able to, you know, somehow identify the right people that is that are fitting to you or the able to like-minded people. Second is how you are able to maximize the potential of these people, right? I think this Ironman or this kind of the competition is one of the good examples that sometimes that you are just office guy, but you change yourself and you start to do the Ironman things, right? And that is, you know, you are just increasing your capabilities and you are just showing what is inside, inside the human body. And I would like to understand that. So if you are able to provide more content this, that will be interesting.
Yeah, more about people and growing people, developing people, yourself, I think. Good topics. All right, Miro, I think that concludes today's show. Thank you so much. Everyone, if you're listening or watching today's episode of Vietnam Innovators, I just want to give a big shout out. And again, thanks to Tax Spaces here at Hanoi for giving us their space and recording a few episodes here today. If you want to visit them, they're here in Hanoi. Check them out. Comments below. Miro, thanks so much. Looking forward to having you back in Vietnam finally. It's only been a year, but it's good to have you back. Looking forward to the next season of Vietnam Innovators, Vietnamese with you as well.
Thank you very much, Hao, for today.
All right, see you guys. Bye-bye.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.